Are you ready for the Low Blows Network?
All right. Rick, don't get fired. Don't get fired. Don't get fired. Don't get fired. Let's do the show. I was planning to have a week off with Low Blows, and just like we've done a lot over the past few weeks, and you know, just take it easy. No podcast, no nothing. I'm just going to enjoy. I'm not even going to read that much news. I'm just going to chill out and like catch up on shows and go for walks and enjoy the grand stretch in the evenings. But it's been a week, because the first weekend, the world of football shit itself. So, look, you're not coming on here and only learning this news, because it's everywhere and was instantly. As soon as yesterday on Sunday afternoon, when 12 teams from Europe, including six Premier League teams, three Serie A teams and three La Liga teams, announced that they would be breaking away to launch the first ever, much vaunted, much spoken about, but never actually delivered upon, European Super League. First, it was just announced and it was kind of leaked. But then by the end of the day, it was announced and the fan backlash was almost instant. Gary Neville just kept saying the word disgraceful, joke, greed. It's greed. He kept saying that on Sky a lot, and everyone was getting very bothered. And then today we have the small matter of the day began with Jose Mourinho being sacked at Spurs for reportedly, this is the most Jose Mourinho move ever, claiming he was so appalled by the European Super League, nothing to do with the fact that Spurs have been muck for weeks. He was so appalled that he refused to take training, which led to his sacking there. During the day came out that was in the making since about Friday. It was always the plan. And then, most recently, as we record this, and who knows what will have happened by the time we finish, UEFA announced that they are planning to remove the remaining teams from European competition as of this Friday. Now, whether that's a bluff or not, I don't know, but things are happening so fast and there's so much to discuss. And the thing I want to discuss as well is just how hilarious all of it is, that I had to call up my old Paddy's New York buddy, Low Blows Hall of Famer, absolute legend, and now Daily Mirror front page journalist, the one and only David Kent. Kento, how's the story been sitting with you? Because we haven't actually talked about our thoughts. We just agreed we're going to get on, we're going to record something. So we haven't actually got a chance to kind of share our opinions, even with each other. So where do you fall on all of this?
I think that, and it's something we actually discussed on Paddy's New York before, that this was eventually going to happen, and it seems that now we've reached a huge this is the moment, this is the point where it's going to be split one way or the other. We've seen kind of warnings about, maybe not warnings, but omens that this was coming even early on the season with Project Big Picture, when a few clubs wanted, right, let's go pay-per-view for the rest of the year, and the backlash instantly came and then they relented, whereas now I think it seems to be a lot more structured, it's a lot more business driven. And as we said a couple of 2 years ago, maybe, that it was inevitability, and now it seems that it's happening quite quickly. And I don't know if there's going to be too much that's going to concern these billionaire owners of these clubs, that Johnny from Birmingham isn't going to get to see his team in the Premier League anymore, or if he's a Villa fan, say, for example, if Villa ever get into it. This isn't about the Premier League. This isn't about La Liga. This isn't about Ligue 1. If PSG eventually rent, this is about breaking into a new market in India and China. That's what this is. That's the whole point of this. This is to get more fans, more eyes on the product, and eventually, yes, more money. So I don't know where, I don't exactly know where I stand on whether I definitely watch it because I'm a new, like, I don't have a horse in this race. I'm a Reading fan. I'm a Cork City fan for my sins. So I watch the Premier League as a neutral anyway.
You never know. Like, there's five qualifying spots.
Yeah, I mean, Reading, who had started out eight wins out of 10, were leading the championship and then done in what is known in championship terms as doing a Leeds and peaked way too early. Missus didn't like that one. So, like, okay, yeah, listen, we could go up in 10 years, but I'm watching as an outsider looking in with fascination. Like, obviously, you're a United fan. And you've gone on record before saying that you expected this to happen. So what are your thoughts on it?
I expected it to happen, but I want to come out and say that, like, it's not as if I support it. It's just when you look at the numbers, like, I'll be straight up first and foremost, and I don't think I'm, like, saying any hot takes or anything controversial here. It sounds awful. Like, the plan they have sounds awful. And the fact that they haven't got it's a bit of a mess right now, because, like, they've come out and they've made this press release where it's like the 15 founding teams consisting of, and then list 12 teams, and it's just like teams to be decided later. And then, like, you know, we later hear that those three teams that are missing are PSG, Bayern and Dortmund, who are steadfastly saying no, it's not happening. So obviously the closed shop version of it is just not great. I think, see, here's why I always said it was inevitability, and this is something that, like, again, like, we talked about a couple of years ago. I had it out with Mr. Small Package Phil Boyd on Ask Low Blows not too long ago as well about this. And here's why, and I kind of, like, not that I respect or understand it, but I do get what the owners are seeing, and I'm trying to see it from their standpoint. They're looking at it and saying, you know, we say that, oh, we like, you know, league, we like it the way it is. There's 20 teams in the Premier League, and that's how you decide who the best in England and Spain and Italy are. And then there's 32 teams in the group stage of the Champions League, and that pits together nicely with, there's, it goes down to 16 and 8 and 4, and it's just nice. It's nice. It's comfortable. We all know when the games are played. We all know, you know, in February, the Champions League comes back and it gets really exciting, and we're used to that. But, like, they look at that and, like, they employ not only people, but teams that are designed to maximize the revenue of that they make from football and to explore new ways of making revenue. So they were always going to look at it and say, well, this doesn't work for us because it's not like, you know, we can make much more money if we play these kind of games every week, you know? And I thought that kind of be the way it was, where domestic leagues were scrapped, not scrapped, but domestic leagues were, like, we're in a European Super League and that was the league. And then, like, your Premier League and your La Liga and your Serie A became all of a sudden, like, equivalent Division Ones, if that made sense. And there was promotion relegation between it. That's how we kind of always envisioned it playing out. And who knows, maybe that could be the way it goes. This, you know, there's a long way to go in this story. This may never happen. This could be dead by the time you finish recording the podcast. The story's moving so fast. But the way they've done it is clumsy. It doesn't sound appealing. It doesn't sound fun. It sounds like a preseason tournament, except a bit extravagant. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like Man United against Bayern Munich. And you're like, yeah, but for what? Because the reality is, first off, Arsenal are there. And even Spurs are there. Like, and I was listening to the Second Captain's podcast today, and they made a great point where it's like, how can Spurs claim to have outgrown the Premier League when they haven't won it? They've never won the Premier League. They haven't won the first division since 1961. So the fact that they're being, like, told, we're being told they're the 12 elite teams, It is farcical, but also as well, like, it's just what does this prove? Who is it for? If they had PSG and Bayern and Dortmund were like, you know what? Yeah, probably, I don't like it, but probably the best team in Europe is in this 15, whether we want it or not. And that's probably going to be the way it is. Apart from these 15 teams, the only team to have won the Champions League in the past two decades is Porto. That one weird year when Jose Mourinho. So they would have a legitimate claim, but without them, they don't. And it's just nothing. It's like, it's almost like a Six Nations without their pride and the kind of glory, and you know, where it's like these are the best six and this is like effectively the European Championships, but the Six Nations has a tradition and heritage that justifies it. This doesn't. This is just them making it up as they're going along and doing so very crudely for profit. Having said that, like, I find this story fascinating because there's no one position you can be in. It's the type of, this is why I love this story and why we had to record this podcast. It's the type of story where it's so fucked up and it fucks everything up so badly. There's no good guys in this. People are turning around and they're saying, you know, well done PSG for opting out of it. And it's like, oh yeah, let's give a big round of applause to the murderous regime of Qatar. You know what I mean? Like, there's no good guys. The Premier League, Gary Neville coming out yesterday and be like, greed, greed, it's all greed. And it's like, you work for Sky and you work for, not that there's anything wrong with that, but you work for Sky and you work for the Premier League. But you work for the Premier League, and the two of these things came together in the exact same way. And I think this is where, like, and then as such, what happens is when people, because it's a big news story and everyone wants to have their say and everyone wants to have their opinion, and we can't just let it play out. We have to react in the media and we have to have the strongest reaction. And everyone is then coming out and acting like the Premier League is this grassroots, for the people, by the people organization. When it's like, even when the Premier League are making the statement where they're like, this is disgusting. It's like, this is how you were formed. The biggest clubs came together and they said, you know, they said that, you know, we can make more money doing it our way, so we're going to take charge. And that's how the Premier League was formed. And, you know, with the Premier League, you know, if you were to research it, it's a bit of a, you know, to the victor goes the spoils and the winner writes the history books. The Premier League will now tell you the story that English football was, you know, in the worst state it was ever in the late 80s. Forgetting the fact that before Heysel and before they had the ban from European football, they dominated between Liverpool dominated European football, as much as I hate to say it. Liverpool dominated European football in a way that we have never seen since. We've never seen one team as dominant as Liverpool were back in those days. So to say that the 80s were this hard time of Premier League football and we needed like the Premier League and Sky to save England from the doldrums, that's absolutely farcical. The UEFA turning around and like them getting on a high horse, and I guess they kind of are the least bad option, but the Champions League is the exact same. Like, why are we pretending that this is new? Why are we pretending that this is this like revolutionary thing and this doesn't happen all the time in sports? Like, why are we pretending that like UEFA are better than this? Why are we pretending that like UEFA's last president is banned from football for corruption? Like, they're not the good guys in this, and they've done the exact same thing. And there's also a part of me that wants to, you know, play devil's advocate and be like, well, you know, people were upset when in the Champions League, for example, they stopped making it a straight knockout tournament. And that was forced by the big clubs. And that's a very similar move to this. They were upset when in the Champions League, they stopped making it the Champions League and they allowed like the big countries to have as much as four entrants into it. And then when like they've had some years, they've had five when a team has won and then not finished in the top four. And that competition in itself is so bastardized and so money driven these days that to turn around and act like this is an act of greed, as if all of football isn't an act of greed, is insane. And there's no right opinion. There's no good way to think of it, because no matter what you're doing, we're just being confronted with what football is now. And this is what it is. And this is the business eventuality that we've arrived at, where it's like, do we want to go with the greedy, you know, corrupt organization over here, or do we want to go with the, you know, teams looking to bleed the game dry? Like, what do you go with? Do you go with corruption, where they're definitely legally bad people in UEFA's corner, or do we go with like people who like don't want to play by the rules and want to, you know, shift the odds over to their favor, which is legal, but a bit immoral. Like, there's no good guy. There's no right opinion. At least that's where I'm at. And that's kind of why I need to speak about it, because I need to know how I feel more than anything.
It's so interesting that you mentioned the idea of the breakaway. And that is what this is. It's clubs looking to make more money going to business for themselves, because a sport that you and I both love, darts, it's exactly what happened in the late 80s, early 90s, when 16 of the world's best players went to Sky and said, we can do better than this. Give us a tournament. Give us one tournament. We'll prove it. Sky got behind them. Barry Hearn got behind them. And suddenly there was this juggernaut that is the Professional Darts Corporation. And now we've got the organization where they departed from, the British sort of darts organization, dead 20 years later. And even like, you can see in sort of stuff that's coming closer to home in the GAA. So the Munster Football Championship, Cork and Kerry are seeded because they kept winning it so often. In the 80s, I decided, right, we'll put you both seeded in the semi-finals. The other four Munster counties kicked up a fuss and they just had to deal with it in the end. It still goes forth to this day. Now, you still get the odd shock. Tipperary are the Munster Football Champions as we speak because they beat Cork last year and Cork beat Kerry. But there was this situation that suddenly no one was happening with, and we're seeing it again in the GAA conversation with the Dublins, with the Dubs having won six All-Irelands in a row. They should be seen in the Leinster Championship. They haven't lost a Leinster game in 10 years. So you've got that conversation as well. But the reaction, and yeah, you can talk about UEFA being as morally corrupt as it is over the last years, Platini, and you've got Seferin coming out today and saying, well, look, we're going to ban them from the Euros and ban them from the Champions League and ban the players from playing the World Cup. FIFA are the one that I really want to hear from, and Gianni Infantino, because he has been doing this exact same thing in Africa for the last 2 years. That is his baby, the African Super League. And people in Africa and clubs in Africa are exactly too happy with it as well. But that has been ongoing for a couple of years. That has been his baby. And now it's looking, maybe, I don't know if the timing of the European Super League has been too good for him, because it was looking as if the African Super League was just about to build up, just about to get the clubs on side. Now this is all kicked off in Europe and suddenly everyone is looking for Infantino and his reaction, FIFA's reaction. Now, what he'll say, because if he comes out and says, oh, this European Super League is morally corrupt and we can't be having that, then the African Super League is done as well. Because he can't just turn around and go on the other cheek and go, well, you can just get rid of this in Europe and I'm just going to run with this in Africa. So, like, it's so, as you say, there's no right opinion to have here. And Gary Neville on Sky, and Gary, like, Sky, the greatest trick that the devil ever pulled was thinking that the Premier League was the savior of English football. English football was fine. You ask Leeds United how good English football was. You ask any other team in Division One back then how good football was. Did they need this Premier League? No, they didn't. And you're looking at it, and there's no one right. That it's like, I love working in the sports journalism industry now, because I'm seeing every which take, and I'm giving some of my own, and no one knows who's right, and we won't know who's right for another 6 months or so to see if this gets off the ground or not, and if they get their concessions, and if they suddenly form this European Super League. Like, you can talk about at the top level that it's bad for the game, it's bad for even coming all the way around to the grassroots as well, say the League of Ireland, because if the European Super League sets up, how does that affect the Champions League? How does that affect the Champions League qualifiers for League of Ireland clubs who suddenly don't have much money, don't get the 100 grand or whatever, 400 grand from UEFA? How does this affect the idea of an All-Ireland League? Because that's suddenly becoming quite a relevant topic as well between the IFA and the FAI, but the whole sticking point was over European spots in the Champions League and the Europa League. How does that happen with the European Super League taking up a few? And it's just mental. Like, and my genius is that my belief always is that having massive investors in charge of football clubs hasn't worked out too well in the past for lower level teams. So as a perfect example, now we're talking relevancy. Are you aware of what's happening with Dundalk Football Club?
Yes, and today alone, like, sneaking in under all the headlines, they're like, by the way, all these people are gone.
For anyone who doesn't, basically Dundalk once came off the back of this historic Europa League run a few years ago and instantly sold the club to American investors, who last year sacked Vinnie Perth, who was Stephen Kenny's right-hand man, by all accounts, genius football, great coach, great knowledge of the league and how to get things right. They started off poor and he got the sack, and then suddenly he was replaced with this Italian coach from an American soccer camp who had done a few soccer camps in New York. That was it. That was all of his basis of management. He didn't have any coaching badges, but he got put in for half a season. Did brilliantly. Winning the FA Cup would be a serious stroke. Winning the FAI Cup last year, and then suddenly a few, like, Dundalk owners realised, oh, crap, you need actual badges. You need investment here. So they spent an extraordinary amount of money, the likes of which the League of Ireland hadn't really seen for a long, long time, since Shelburne in the early 2000s. And then suddenly there's a poor form. Shane Keegan gets installed because he has the coaching badges and Filippo didn't. Filippo Giovagnoli, the coach they chose, didn't. Right, I'm off yesterday. And then suddenly, before the game against St. Pat's on Friday, Felipe goes, well, I'm off as well. So now they had two resignations in one day. They don't have a manager at the moment. And now there's protests from Dundalk fans against the government. Against the board. And you, like, suddenly that's a situation where you've gone from this incredible Europa League run to, like, if the American owners pull out of Dundalk, you could be talking bankruptcy in the next 18 months because they don't have that money. They don't have that Europa League money anymore. That would have set them up for 10, 15 years, and they would have been able to do work on Oriel Park, for example, which is desperately even upgrade. So this idea that American investment and other investment, Qatari investment in PSG, yes, long-term, brilliant, or short-term, brilliant success, trophies. And I was only having this discussion with a Manchester United fan at the weekend. What would you rather in the next 5 years, player development or trophies? He said player development. Whereas you're looking at the top brass, they clearly want money, they clearly want exposure, they clearly want trophy, they want to build their brand. And look, we're NFL fans, we see this all the time. Stan Kroenke owns Arsenal, also owns the Los Angeles Rams. Los Angeles Rams, is it not the St. Louis Rams? No, because they saw that there was more money to be made in Los Angeles. It's going to be massive, and it's going to be huge to see the reaction. Like I said at the start, we're at this kind of turning point now where there's a definitive split. They tried to a project big picture, they got pushed back, whereas now they've come forward again, and it does seem like this is going to cause the rift that could affect football, English football, European football, world football for the next 5 years.
And this is kind of what I was saying around the time of Project Big Picture, where it was like, we need to get on board and engage early with this, because otherwise, we're going to get like, well, now we're just fucking doing this. You said no to this, this, and this. They were actually compromises. And now we're just going to go ahead with this. And that's what this is. It's an aggressive move that just, there's no disregard. Like, what is the Champions League? Will there be even a Champions League final? Now, I think there will be. I literally, before, like, minutes before putting it on air, I was like, I will bet any money right now that we see the end of the Champions League right now. Because there's too much money at stake, but that's it. It just fucks up everything so completely that they've made such an outspoken commitment to this that I don't know how they go back. I don't know where everything lands and how it lands and what happens from here. Because even UEFA are putting themselves into a corner, because right now UEFA are threatening to ban the clubs involved from all European competitions, effective immediately, like as of Friday. So if Friday comes and they don't back down, the official word from UEFA right now is you're out of the Champions League, it's over, PSG are the champions, and that's it. That's not going to happen. That can't happen. Like, who knows? Like, I didn't think this could happen so aggressively and overnight. But That can't happen because of the lawsuits that UEFA would get from their broadcasting partners. Like, and this is kind of the ironic thing where people kind of look at it and they're like, you know, holding on to the sanctity of the game. And it's like the battle has already been lost. This is about money, and sports is a business. And I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that. But the problem is with football that where we are right now is that it's a free market business. So when you have a free market business where there's no kind of, you enable anyone to come in and take over clubs. There's no kind of, like the NFL, they're comparing this to the NFL quite a lot, and there is valid comparisons to make. Like, I also find it hilarious how people can be like, how dare they have certain clubs guarantee themselves a spot, and it's like, but you love the NFL, dude. Like, you do love that format when you're used to it and it's all you're introduced to. So I'm thinking, is part of this fans just not liking change? Is this just a more extreme version of the VAR argument where, like, VAR, if it works effectively, is undoubtedly better for the game. It's better if important goals are actually counted as goals. We want the best teams to win ultimately, or the team that deserves to win within the 90 minutes, not necessarily the best. Like, we still want upsets and all of that kind of side of things. But, like, you know, it is ultimately better, but the problem is there's a lot of kinks that need to be worked out, and it's causing boomers to kind of get uncomfortable and want change and this and that and the other. I'm thinking, is it just an extreme version of that, or is there a substance to this? Like, what? How can someone? I don't see how someone who enjoys the NFL can hate the idea of this. But, like, at the same time, I enjoy the NFL and I don't like the idea. So I don't know how to feel about it or where it falls. But I do find it hilarious, like, also that people are, like, coming out and, like, I don't think people know why they're angry yet. I don't think people have thought that far ahead. I think people just saw Gary Neville's rant and didn't realize that Gary Neville is doing his job there. Again, Gary Neville works for Sky. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but he works for Sky, and Sky are in bed with the Premier League, for better or worse. And, like, this is the thing where he's just doing a solid for his employers. He is saying the line that he needs to say. But the thing is as well, though, that it's a case where, you know, like, if Sky were to then win the rights for this, you know, you'd start seeing ads saying a new beginning for European football. And this isn't, like, about Sky. If BT Sport, they do the exact same thing, because BT Sport are coming out just as strongly about this. It's just not, that's not the clip that's viral. Everyone's coming out against this now. But the team that wins the people that wins the rights to this will come out and they'll say it's the best thing ever. And a lot of us will buy into it and we'll be fine with it. And once we get the hang of it. And then part of me is like, and genuinely part of me is like, well, do you remember the time when we went mad and said that the Euros were ruined because they went from 16 to 24 teams, and then Ireland got in because of that because we got in through being, like, in the third place team, started to get into playoffs, and we won that playoff and we got in, we're like, maybe it's not so bad. And then we got through to the second round because of that, we're like, ah, maybe this isn't so bad. And then we're at the end of it, we're like, that was actually good, and we really hated the idea. You know, the Champions League is one such example where people are like, oh, if you stop making a straight knockout, you'll ruin it. And then group stages come in and we're like, oh, lovely group stages. And then even the criticism of the Champions League, like, in recent years, was that there's too many predictable games. But now we're like, we've just forgotten about that, and we're like, I always love the predictable games. I like the feeling of certainty when I see Zenit St. Petersburg play Barcelona, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, so there, I don't know, and we don't have enough information to know. This is the thing. There's no information coming out, but people are very certain that they dislike this, and they're very certain for some reason it's disgusting, but they also want to maintain other things which are guilty of being just as disgusting as such. That's what fascinates me about this, because the Premier League is not the moral high ground here. But also as well, like you said earlier, English football didn't need a Premier League. But you can definitely say that the Premier League has boosted English football's profile. So is that not proof of concept that this can work in some situations? I don't know. I don't have the answers to the questions I'm asking here. But that's what I'm kind of looking at as well. Like, because, okay, yeah, they did go for the money bags grab where the breakaway teams, like, formed their own league. And yes, the Football League was pissed off at the time, and we thought that it could never be done, and it was disgraceful and disgusting and all the same things people are saying now. But then the Football League are like, all right, well, we can't fight this, so we'll just get on board. And then when they got on board, they're like, okay, let's figure a way out. And that kind of brings me on to what a lot of people are speculating about this, and what I want to know your thoughts on, that it's just an extreme negotiation tactic from these clubs. It's just an extreme commitment to the Champions League is ours now. I'm the captain now. You know what I mean? That's what they're doing, where they're going, this is ours now. And you've seen what we can do, and we can fuck everything up, because I don't think the clubs want to be kicked out of the Premier League or their domestic leagues. I don't think they want, the players want to be not playing the World Cup or the Euros. I don't think anyone wants what's going to happen here. So is this just a massively aggressive negotiation tactic?
There is certainly an argument to be made for that. And as we've said, this isn't just like one snap decision made by one person. This is something that teams of people have been paid meticulously to research and analyze and do all this to come to this decision. But my whole thing is like, it is very extreme. And they are now, if it fails, they have may have burnt quite a few bridges with air quote legacy fans, which I've seen banded around the core supporters. But at the end of the day, are 40,000 people going to not go to Anfield to watch Liverpool if this fails? I'd be surprised, because they still want to watch football. They're not going to go down the road to Tranmere, and they're not going to go to watch Oldham or whatever if you're a Manchester fan, because A, the quality isn't there, and that's not what you're used to. B, stands and facilities aren't the same. And C, United and City and Liverpool could easily get 40,000 tourists to suddenly sign up and fill the ground, because they've got this huge brand and they've been well able to do it.
Also, as well, just a note there, and I don't mean to cut off your point.
Go on.
The way fans can work themselves back into it is Klopp didn't agree this, Solskjaer didn't. It was the Glazers, it was John Henry. You know what I mean? So that's how we'll talk our way around it. We will. Like, I still want United to overturn 8 points on City. That's my big focus now. And I feel like I want to be thinking about that tonight, but instead I'm thinking about this. So sorry to cut off your point, but that's how we'll talk ourselves our way around. And I completely agree with what you're saying. We will talk ourselves around.
Absolutely. So Now it's case, like you've seen, we're recording this, what, Monday night, about a half an hour before kickoff in Ellen Road, Leeds, Liverpool, and you see the banners, and you see how Liverpool Supporters Trust have pulled banners from the Klopp. And, like, it's not as if the owners, the John Henry and that group won't just go, well, that makes more space for us to put up a brand advertiser for Nike, like you see at Spurs and the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, where it's just banner of Nike and their sponsors and everyone else. So I don't know if that's going to affect them too much, even when fans come back in. Are they still going to be able to replicate the atmosphere of the Klopp without this of the Klopp's cop without
the I thought goal. You were being cute there. I was like, okay, he's going with it. We'll go with it.
Just a mistake, classic. But yeah, they will be able to replicate, because they'll still get fans through the door. So I don't think they see these supposed legacy fans that the group see these core supporters as, but that's what they are. The legacy there in the past, legacy by definition is in the past and what you leave behind you. So I don't think it's going to bother them too much. Like, again, it is PSG and Bayern, it's definitely a negotiation process. That's what I saw you say yesterday. They're not doing this out of a moral. Carlos Rummenigge can say this as much as he wants, and PSG's owners, reminder, Qatar, can say it as much as they want that this is a moral high ground. No, it's a business decision that they think that they can possibly get more out of this. But the accusations of greed from Gary Neville and Roy Keane, like, Gary Neville's a part owner of Salford City, who have blown other clubs out of it with their financial power to get into League Two where they are now. Salford City just weren't put into League Two by the FA. They had to come right from the bottom, like AFC Wimbledon did back in the day. And suddenly now they're in League Two. And I was like, oh, look, aren't Salford City great with the class of 92 behind them? Roy Keane, okay, less of a bad voice on this, but he still had a clause in his Manchester United contracts where he was the highest paid player. So, as I say, Sky, they're saying the right things for Sky, because Sky can then put these out and go, rah, 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 this is disgraceful, this is horrible. And then suddenly when the bidding rights, I mean, we're talking about that streaming, there's talks of that streaming service that I can't pronounce, DSNN. I don't know how it's pronounced, and I don't want to get into another hyperbole situation like I did a couple of years ago. So they're looking like it, but then if it goes well for them, then suddenly Sky and BT and everyone else look like, oh, wow, look at the viewers they're getting. We can go for this and when the contract is up, and then it's wonderful and it's magnificent. It is just, we're raw to this now, because it is a day after the Mace thing. It's a half an hour after Seferin has come out and said, we're going to ban everyone by Friday. So we could do this again next week and the entire situation could be finished, or it could be changed, or it could be the future of football. We just don't know.
We should discuss it, and I think we should give our irresponsible takes on that. But I do want to talk about the fans, because To me, a lot of the reaction to this, and again, I don't like this idea. I'd much rather it stayed the way it is. That's like, if you're talking personal preference, so like before anyone gets on and sees me playing devil's advocate as me secretly supporting it, I don't want this to come true. And I don't really take it that seriously yet. And we'll get to that. But I think, again, it's one of these situations where the reaction to it is so blown out of proportion because we can't. This is where we're running into difficulty. We're actually running into difficulty to actually enunciate what we think about it because we don't know. We don't have the info here to be able to actually make an informed opinion. So a lot of this is just based off Gary Neville's rant, where he just like, and he's just like greed, rich, and he's just, it's the typical kind of rant when you want to like, you know, work up kind of, you know, a certain, you know, sector of people. When you start paying rich people, oh, they're all greedy, money, how do rich get richer, greed. He was literally like, he sounded like the fucking Underworld song Born Slippy, where it's like log. He's like literally greed. He's not even like formulating sentences or making a coherent argument. Like literally at one stage, like he just said joke, and that was the point that he made. Like it wasn't a reaction. It wasn't a substantiated argument because, again, he, like all of us, don't have enough information to make it. And also, but the one thing that he's doing is he's kind of like hoodwinking the fans into feeling like they're under assault here, because I agree that the term legacy fan and that side of things that's kind of coming out, and I don't know how true that is. I don't know where that's coming from. I don't know if that's leaked sources and I'm using air quotes to say that or not. The term legacy fan is a bit insensitive, but it's also true. It's all there. There is like a generation of fans who will support the clubs no matter what, and they've always been there and they've had their season ticket for 50 years and they know their names in the local shops and, you know, beer vans and stuff like that, or chip vans and stuff like that. They'll know them all because they're the regulars. And it's a bit insensitive, but I don't see how the fans are being attacked here. And I'm seeing a lot of awkward kind of like, I'm seeing a lot of awkward comparisons where, like, people are like, I'd much rather go to Burnley on a cold, wet Monday night than see my team play Milan. And it's like, would you, like? And I'm like, A, I don't know if you would. I don't know if that was the reality of your life, you'd actually say, oh, yeah, no, it was better Burnley. And even if it did, it'd be like someone saying the first division was better than the Premier League. And we're like, it wasn't though, really, was it? Like, it's not better than what we have today. Today's really good. And not to say that the first division was bad or anything like that. I respect people's appreciation. But, like, now is irrevocably higher quality football, higher caliber we're getting. So apart from your own nostalgia, you can't really make it an argument for it. But again, no one can take away your nostalgia or how it made you feel or how it connected to you either. But people saying like, I'd rather see this and stuff like that, it's like they're not actually making arguments. They're just reacting emotionally by how they're being directed to feel, rather than actually any of us being able to have an opinion on it beyond this competition sounds a bit shit, to be honest.
This fits in quite well with a point that I'm actually focusing on as well, in the sense that, yeah, look, Barry from Birmingham probably doesn't want to see like, oh, I'm going to toddle down the road to League Two or whatever. But a fan in India or a fan in China is presented with the option of a Friday night fixture between, say, Brighton and Sunder and Southampton, or a Friday night fixture between Chelsea and Real Madrid. There's only one option there, and that's what the focus is. That's what this whole idea seems to be about. It's, again, expanding the brand. So, what it like, again, it's an emotional reaction from a lot of people, and there's a lot of people going, "Well, this is the end of sport and the end of football." It's not. It isn't. It's not. Like, it's anything that's ever been put forward as a club killer or a sport killer just hasn't turned out to be that way. So the idea that football won't exist without this European Super, or football won't exist if this European Super League gets the whole host, it's ridiculous. It will exist. It might just have a new fan base with 2.1 billion potential customers instead of the, now don't get me wrong, 100 and something million in in the UK. Like, if you look at it, you and I think it was 442 had a piece on this, and a digital piece on this, or it might have been the Telegraph actually, where the overall subscription packages and stuff for Sky and BT for the year and BBC and for your Premier League total 23 million. And compare that to the market that they could be getting elsewhere in, like, in China and India and Asia. And it's just, it's completely, what's the word I'm looking for? It's completely skewed and it's completely different, and it's this huge potential. And like, there's another thing that the only kind of legitimism that everyone seems to have about it is the lack of relegation and promotion. But
yeah, I agree with that.
We have two aspiring leagues in the MLS and in the A-League in Australia where there's no relegation promotion. They're slowly getting growing in popularity, so it does, maybe this is the way forward. No, probably not. Not personally for me. I love seeing relegation promotion, not least because my Reading team are in the chance of a playoff seeing promotion in the Premier League, and my own team, Cork City, got relegated last year. Maybe it's not a good thing. But like this, and that was one of the clubs back in the early 90s when the idea of the Premier League first came out, I think it might have been Bolton, suggested that they went with a closed house and there was no relegation in Premier League and promotion in the Premier League. And it got voted down, obviously, because otherwise you wouldn't have what we have today. But I think, like, there is certainly scope for this, what is it, five teams up and five teams down based on domestic performance? So
it's not even five teams down. It's just five teams qualify on an annual basis. But then what happens if one of those teams is Bayern Munich and they can legitimately win it? Are they in next season? Are they in one of the five spots? Do they take over from Arsenal? What happens if Arsenal are last every year? I agree with what you're saying. Like, this is what I'm saying. And this is where we have to understand this. And, like, again, we'll get to it, but I don't foresee the Premier League with the top four not mattering. I don't see, like, you know, I don't see that coming into play, which is what they're proposing, where the Premier League has no meaning and it literally is just for the glory of being called the best team in England. Because if they're not playing for top four in Champions League, then the purpose of the league is just shattered. And kind of the only thing that people can do, the only thing the UEFA can do is just ban them from the league and say, this is now your version of football and we're going to have ours over here. And it might be second rate, but whatever, like, at least our players can play for their country and, like, compete on that level. That is one possibility here. I don't think that's going to be the case though. But I think people need to, again, understand that what we see as football doesn't necessarily have to be football. Again, if you got into the NFL in the past 5-10 years, you never questioned the idea. You never turned around. No one I've ever heard has, in their heart of hearts, made a case for the worst NFL team to go down and the best CFL team or XFL team to go up. Now, who knows if the XFL had gathered momentum? You never know, because they like thinking about things in a weird different way. But, like, no one saw the league as less than. The NBA, the exact same. No one sees it as less than for there not to be a promotion relegation aspect. It's a perfectly valid form of sport. Who is to say that this is the only way that it is? The Premier League argument is that it's the only way that it's ever been, but that's not an argument for why it should remain that way. Things change and evolve and stuff like that. And again, like this, you brought up a very good point where it kind of ties in with a point that I made at the start of the show, where they employ teams of people whose one job they spend 40 hours a week is how do we make more money out of this? Where are the opportunities? Where's the biggest opportunities and development areas? And they're not going to look at this and say, well, we have this very obvious idea. Like, it's different when, you know, when you're a fan and consumer or something and you enjoy it, you don't want it to change, obviously. Do you know what I mean? But, like, you can't turn around and reasonably make that, like, argument where if there's just an obvious choice, you just ignore it. Because these teams can't, these people, like, can't go to their bosses and say, no, we're doing everything perfect, we just keep it as it is. That's not the way sport or business moves. It's not the way anything moves. It's not the way, like, any form of entertainment. If you're in a band, if you're in, say, the fucking Pussycat Dolls, right, they, someone in a lab, and we mightn't like to admit that art is made this way, but art is just as guilty of this. Someone in a lab said, listen, everyone likes Nicole and nobody knows the other four's names. You know what I mean? And there may be some Pussycat Dolls purists who are like, no, Kimberly Wyatt was actually the talented one there. Or they may be like, you know, Annette was a backup dancer, and music should be about being able to perform in your local high school play and then being able to perform on stages around the world, just as for Annette and stuff like that. No, people looked at it and they said, Nicole Scherzinger is the star here. We're going to take her away from the band and she's going to go solo and have an amazing career and no one's going to care. People might be upset in the meantime if they're big Pussycat Dolls fans. They'll be fine. They'll live. And that's what happened, and they did live, and everyone was fine, and because it was the right call. So there is a bit of push-pull here that I think all of us need to accept. They're doing this, and they're getting away with it because they can. Whether this is the finished product, I think this is what we'll have to get our heads around. And again, I want to restate this. I am someone who would rather we stuck with the status quo. I'm with you. I just accept the reality of this situation is that it doesn't make sense for them. And to get this, we need to now just reckon with the idea that, like with the PDC, no one turns around and says, you know, darts should have stayed the way it was now, because like the livings that dart players can make off the new way. But everyone back in the day said the same thing that football fans are saying now. It's like, this is disgraceful. Fans are going to ruin the sport. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. They're going to make it popular. They're going to tour it. And it's not going to mean what it meant. And it didn't, but it started to mean more because there were more sums of money at play. So more people were getting into that. So more better players were coming up and being more attracted to this. And it became a bigger global brand. And ultimately there was concessions that had to be made. A lot of people hate watching darts these days for the fans and how loud they are and how they chant during matches and put players off and this and that and the other. And that's a valid point to dislike darts, but it's not a valid point to keep things the old way, where the old way actually didn't make sense when you looked at it as a business. So I think we need to expand our minds to that, and that like maybe the only way to do football isn't 20 teams from the same country compete and against each other twice throughout the season. And that's the only way you can decide in football who is better. It's not. There may be other ways, but I don't think this is the way. I don't think this is good. I don't think it's going to work. I don't think we're going to see the European Super League. I think there's too much at stake here. There's too much at play and nobody wants it. So I think everyone's going to come back to the table and I think we're going to have a normal Champions League. I think we're going to see the end of this Champions League. I think all the players from the 16 teams are going to play in the Euros this summer. Personally, that's just me. Let's be reckless though, because that's the most fun part about these conversations. Let's be completely reckless and let's put our necks on the line. What do you think is going to be the long-term consequence of this?
I am not as certain as you that, well, like, obviously this Champions League and this summer, fine. We'll get through the summer. But then the next year, and like, we haven't even mentioned the restructuring of the Champions League that's meant to come in 2024 that was ratified today, where suddenly it's been split in two again and there's less games. And some would say that's squeezing out the little clubs and stopping the likes of Ajax and Porto from getting into the deeper ends and keeping all the money for one or whatever it is. And that's a very similar argument to what the European Super League is about to be. But I'm just saying, like, what I'm thinking now is that if this fails, we're going to be having another conversation 5 years' time about something similar. They'll have come back, they'll have done more research, and then suddenly there'll be another European Super League 2 proposal being put forward. So I think it's ignorant to believe that football should always stay the way it is and as it is now forever, because we've seen in other sports, adapt and change, and suddenly it's become huge. Like NFL wasn't a massive thing here 10, 15 years ago, and then suddenly there was a boom period for it because you had the likes of the London Games and like the College Classic in the Aviva, and suddenly the NFL fan base in Ireland grew tenfold. And like, there's even talks of the NFL looking to bring maybe not the Jaguars but a team into London and another team into Europe because it's growing in Germany. So that's done over 15 and 20 years that they thought, right, we'll put this idea forward, it's failed. We'll put this idea forward, it failed. We'll put this idea forward, there it is. And that's what I think this could be. We've seen Project Big Picture put the feelers out, failed. European Super League at a much higher level. If it fails again, I'm sure we're going to be having the exact same conversation 10 years, 15 years, 5 years, maybe even next year, about something that concessions may have to be made for these clubs. So to think and to believe now that nothing will change and this is going to be the perfect until the end of time. That won't be the case.
And also as well, like, when I speak it this way, and people may see it complete, and I understand if you do, I understand if you're listening and you hate me right now and you're screaming at your podcast, you're just screaming into the void because we're all at home anyway. So you're just screaming into the void at me and you're going, on one hand, you're saying you like it this way, but on the other hand, you're saying we have to accept it. And that's because I am accepting of my position as I don't make the decisions and I'm not going to make the decisions. And that's not how decisions in sport are unfortunately made. Whether I like it or not, I can just accept it. And what I'd also say is that there's a comfort to be found in that because I've been able to just sit back and enjoy the chaos of this for the past couple of days. I'm not disgusted by any of it because I'm just like, I had no expectations. I'm like, all of them are greedy cunts anyway. So I'm just going to sit back, enjoy the chaos, and just whatever people tell me football is next year, I'll just go with it. But also as well, what's worth remembering is that there's no way the football was. There was no past the football and then there's just the future. There was never a time when football was forever the same. You know what I mean? It's always been developing. The sport's only over, like, you know, over nearly 200 years old now, I think. Like, as an organized sport. But, like, it's only around that age now and it's always been changing and it's all, and look at us right now. We're like, oh, please just give me the Premier League and Champions League the way it was. Keep in mind that those were ideas that we hated at the time. We hated it. We were like, this is a disgrace. We said all the same things about these, and that doesn't mean that this is a great idea. I don't think it is, but like, we will be fine and we will enjoy it and we will continue to have football. It will continue to exist. Will there be consequences? Yeah, like, there may be some situations where clubs go out of business or, you know, leagues have to be reimagined or this or that. But then from the ashes of that, from the ashes of a Wimbledon going bust, you'll get an AFC Wimbledon. You know what I mean? You'll get new stories. And that's kind of, that's life. There's no comfort zone in life. There's no, and especially in big business where money and stuff is involved, it's never going to be like just that way and stay that way forever, the way you like it. We can't, that's not the way life goes. And we can't plan around it that way. So I think that's just one important thing to remember throughout all this. Any kind of final thoughts on this, like just kind of reflections or anything random we haven't got around to covering yet on this? Like, I know, again, next week we could probably have a completely different and new conversation. Tomorrow we probably could, the rate the news is coming in.
Like, it's a great point that you make going back to history. And I am a sports historian. You go back to 1884 when the FA decided to make an organisation. We have regulated football competition for the first time in the FA Cup. Now, obviously, football had been played in other countries for decades before that, but it had never been regulated until the FA decided, right, we're going to make our own competition here with the northern clubs. The clubs in the north of the country, for the most part, they were based off rugby league, which had been set up a few years before that. And then 5 years after that, well, suddenly there's a league that, like, the FA decided, well, we want a league now. And half the clubs were like, huh? Like this argument has been happening for those 200 years since 1884. So, or 1887, I should say. So, like, again, it's always going to be, well, you're always going to be one side or the other eventually. And then, like, if it works, brilliant, you're on the right side. If it doesn't, like, listen, we'll come back to you in 5 years with another thing, or you'll be back to us more likely.
Yeah.
Like, a Liverpool,
we do. We're gluttons for it.
Jurgen Klopp, even tonight, having a pop off, and I see in the quotes pre-match, because Leeds wore a warm-up shirt saying Champions League, earn it, and then Klopp was going nuts about that. Like, obviously, Klopp shouldn't be the one having to answer here. And Bielsa shouldn't be the one having to answer here. It should be the owners, but it isn't, because the owners...
That's excellent shithousing from Leeds. And exactly why I wanted Leeds back in the Premier League. Yes, lads.
Apparently they actually put the shirts in the Liverpool dressing room as well. So say, you can if you want, but here's the message. Like, again, as you mentioned, brilliant from Leeds, brilliant shithouser when you put, like, it goes back to the point that you're going to be one side or the other now. You could easily be one side or the other tomorrow or in 5 years' time when this might or might not have happened. It's the Mo Kinney look for any leaving Sir fans. It's the situation that may or may not happen depending on the circumstances. The Mo Kinney look.
The football Buccaneer look. We've peaked, Kento. It's not going to get better, so we may as well just finish on that high. Excellent stuff, guys. We're just trying to figure it out, just like you guys. So we just said we come together. And I don't know if we've made it more clear for you, or I don't know if we've made it more clear for ourselves. But like, what I'd recommend is, like, just sit back like us and enjoy the madness of it all, because fuck it, this is fun. I wish football would shit itself every single day.
It's mad that the League of Ireland is now, like, normal compared to the Premier League, considering what's going on in the last couple of weeks.
Give it a day. Give it a day. Who knows? Dundalk had a moment today. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. We will be back if the Euros happen. Who knows at this rate? We are planning to bring Paddy's New York back for some Euro specials, as we revealed last week, our last Globlos. So we just wanted to check in, and who knows? Maybe there'll be more. Maybe this time next week. Maybe this time tomorrow we'll be checking in and we'll be going, we need to talk again, because everything we said is relevant. It's that kind of story. Anyway, guys, thank you, Kento, as always, for joining us. I can't wait to have more of these chats during the summer for the Euros. But until then, I've been Rick Nash, and we don't have an outro for this show, so goodbye.